Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Monday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community, taking a little time out today to talk about some inspiration, current events, and read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine. Today is August 8th, 2011. I think this is session number 147. Kind of lose track when we get up into those hundreds and just keep adding on to our knowledge. I would like to remind everyone that this is a simple study session. Any listeners must consult their healthcare provider. The live chat is now running. It's open if anybody wants to get in there to comment, to ask questions. Don't forget to click listen, friend, favorite, and share these sessions with your friends. You can do that by posting it to Facebook or any other of the social networks, and taking the HTML code for the widget and putting it onto your very own website. You can also download the archives of all these shows to your computer, iTunes, or iPod, or other listening device. If you're a professional homeopath and are not yet a member of HWC Community, Homeopathy World Community, you may place an application and we will review it. There are instructions on how to apply. Just a moment ago, I went on Twitter to see what was happening and I received this message and thought, well, let's start with this one by Og Medino on SWAT Institute. And she says, do all things with love. And I think that's a really wonderful place to start. Okay, there is a special announcement that the Bulgarian Sensation School will continue its educational course in the sensation method of homeopathy with Dinesh Eshwan, his workshop and seminar in Bulgaria, and he will correct me for the correct pronunciation of his word, of his name, if I did not pronounce it properly. The workshop is going to be held on September 8th, and the seminar will be led September 9th, 10th, and 11th, 2011, at the Park Hotel in Dobrich, Bulgaria. The topic of the workshop will be children's cases, which is his specialty, and it will be broadcast over the internet in real time. I believe this was also accomplished last year, and so this will be the second year that they are doing this. It was well attended, and hopefully it will be well attended again. They say that it is an exciting journey with Dr. Dinesh as your guide, and it is a scientifically intuitive case witnessing process. He gives a little bullets here. One is for more detailed understanding of this case witnessing process and how he connects it to yoga and various other techniques. He also uses eye movements, hand gestures, and how to break various defenses of the patient, like denial and projections. And maybe this would go right into our study today, because we're going to be talking more about mental disturbances such as insanity, mania, and schizophrenia. He also connects this with the application of Herring's Law in the direction of cure and a homeopathic aggravation. So it sounds like it's going to be an excellent study session, and you can click right on to the main page of HWC to find it on the events calendar. I wanted to talk a little bit about schizophrenia, the delusion creator, and that is because I read an article in the New York Times today about a particular individual and his struggle with this disease and how he has attempted to overcome it. He still has delusionary auditory hearing of people speaking in his mind, telling him he's bad and he's doing bad things, and he talks back to this voice in his head, and he can get into a quite violent state. And we have many, many different remedies in homeopathy that elucidate these types of delusions that people have, and hearing voices and visions and all different things. So I wanted to draw your attention to what Dr. Nagarajan of HWC has written on schizophrenia, the delusion creator. And he basically provides the background of the way the medical profession views this development, misdevelopmental disorder in psychology. He says that it's divided into three parts, the id, ego, and superego, and it's mainly Freudian conceptions. And who first developed these ideas about the id is the personality of the infant, and the ego is the to exist in the objective external world and must possess a reality principle. So in these mental deviations, they're not really in the world as we know it. And then there's the superego, where it uses a part of the id for its development. The layman calls the superego the conscience. This conscience is obtained in a man by his parents, other surroundings, and by himself through mistakes, interjection, and the process of taking over standards of the person's own will. So there is a lot that's going on there with the interaction between the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, and this conversation that's going on. In psychosis, there is a psychological dysfunction in which there is a loss of touch with important aspects of reality, and this moves us into the delusions, hallucinations, and confusion. And he goes on in this article, you can read about it on the network, that in 1860, Dr. Morel of Belgium had named it the dementia praecocia. Later by Dr. Kaplan, named it dementia praecox, where dementia means the lasting mental deterioration, and praecox means which occur in the younger. There's a lot of history to schizophrenia, and I think homeopaths really don't bother so much with the different types and the different names. They're more interested in the observations and understanding what is going on in the person's mental sphere. What are they thinking? What do they have drives and emotions to do? What are these hallucinations and delusions all about? They can show up in many different ways, and that is why the homeopathic repertory is so important, where it records these sensations and delusions, and we have an ability to look them up and put them together into a whole and understand the human being so much more. The problem at the end of his talk here on the HWC is that he says medicine has very little that they can offer in terms of removing these symptoms from the person. I mean, we've got shock treatment and things like that. Here he has listed the therapy and prognosis. Based on the different causes, there's a difference in the mode of treatment. The treatment must be aimed to strengthen the weakened ego and to relieve it from the pressures of the id and superego. And there is this shock treatment, insulin shock or electric shock treatment. Both are quite harsh if you think about it. The other kinds of treatment are occupational therapy, recreational therapy, music therapy, dancing, arts, and handicrafts, which is a lot better. It's a way of redirecting, reframing for the individual so they can cope with their symptoms, not meaning that the symptoms actually go away, where with homeopathic care, homeopathic well-selected remedies, the symptoms may actually just disappear. and not remain, the person be totally relieved of these deviations in the mind. The curability and alleviation of specific cause in case of hereditary and constitutional types is difficult, and in cases of severe maltreatment also is a difficult task based on traditional medicine. We often find that these people are hospitalized due to their physical and psychiatric assessments. They also use drugs that block the dopamine receptors. And so this can affect more than just their mental facility. It can affect a range of functions for the body. And there are a lot of links on HWC regarding the specific of schizophrenia. There's about four blogs there to learn a lot more. We want to thank Dr. Ravindra Saraswat for providing a list of remedies there for specifically schizophrenia. I can name a couple of them: Lachesis, Arsenicum Album, Aurum Metallicum, Hyoscyamus, Lycopodium, Pulsatilla, Stramonium, Sulfur, Aconite, Belladonna, Ignatia, Mercury, Sol, Serinum, Rustox, Anacardium, Calcarb, Causticum, Simisifuga. Boy, there are a lot. And I can tell you, this is the beauty of homeopathy, because we have so much is at our disposal. We don't just have give this drug for this one thing, for this named label disease. And I thank people who are involved with the chat here. In fact, most recently, Heidi Stevenson, who is a great blogger and want to thank her for all she does on the internet, has written that it is only since the advent of antipsychotic drugs and previously when schizophrenics were systematically tortured by medical practitioners that the prognosis is poor. Without drugs and torture, with simple treatment, kindness, and safety, these people can recover and lead normal lives, which is much appreciated. So I wanted to direct your attention to the New York Times article where this man has these auditory delusions and hearing voices telling him that he's no good. There are all of these wonderful remedies that we have. And I'd like you to go to that article. I put it on the broadcast message that I commented, and I appreciate if you push recommend so people who are reading about this mental disorder can learn about homeopathy. I want to thank those who are also listening to the chat today. We're going to go ahead further with our studies. One of the things that I wanted to point out on the HWC was a recent article posted by, it's on the front page, if I have to go and search it out. Oh, it's schizophrenia. It's about fear, and that one, I will check, types of fears. It is also by Ravindra Saraswat, a homeopath in India, who says he lists a whole list of types of fears, and you can see how the fears are very much intertwined with mental disorders that can put a person into a state of insanity and manic situation. And this is very much of what we've been talking about the last couple of sessions on Blog Talk Radio, Homeopathy World Community, with Hahnemann telling us how to approach these types of cases. Dr. Ravindra says that I can provide some more remedies known throughout the homeopathic history. Fear of death, aconite, which is monkshood, is known as the most poisonous plant in Britain and is of special value when the fear is sheer panic accompanied by extreme impatience and frantic restlessness. This person may also predict the time of death. Arnica, our most well-known of all homeopathic remedies, exhibits a horror of imminent death in association with unbearable pain and a great fear of being touched or even approached. Arsenicum album, formerly the most popular weapon in the homicidal poisoner, is so sure he is going to die that he refuses both medicine and food, despite his feeling of utter exhaustion. He asks for sips of warm or hot water, and he has incredible restlessness both in mind and body. Argentum nitricum, which happens to be the drops that are put in babies' eyes, feels hurried, worried, and apprehensive. And when they're ill, they add this, again, this fear of death to their unusual repertoire of fears and apprehensions. He also may predict the hour or even the minute of his impending death. Gelsimium, very much useful for influenza. When a person becomes sick and so utterly low in his mind and weak in his body that the fear of death readily obtrudes. Muscular weakness may also, almost paretic and tremulousness so acute as to provoke a request to be held firmly or even to be sat on to control his shaking. So you can imagine a person with influenza who has the chills and is shaking, and they want to be held to prevent this tremulous being within them. And they could even be chattering their teeth. Phosphorus is naturally an artistic, fearful, and intensely imaginative, creative person, almost inevitably becomes afraid of dying when they are ill. And the last one for fear that he's listed, particularly for fear of death, is cical or cicali, the rye fungus ergot, a virulent neuromuscular poison. It includes anxiety and fear of death in its alarming syndrome of burnings, hemorrhages, paresthesias, and tendency to gangrene, also called St. Anthony's fire. He has also a list of what happens when a person, or remedies for when a person is fearful of the dark, and many other fears. If you want to look up a list of fears, there are literally hundreds of fears in httpphobialist.com. And I guess many of them are listed in our homeopathic repertories. I'm going to check in on the chat. Okay, someone's asking for the link for the New York Times article. I will get that for you as in a moment. I am continuing to read the session for today, and I want to bring your attention to Jon Kabat-Zinn. I posted a nice meditative mindfulness video on the front page of Homeopathy World Community. He was talking to employees of Google, and he was telling them how the mind does not actually go into, he says you would probably go insane if you tried to make your mind blank. It doesn't work. You just have to be observant of the inner talk in the mind. Okay, thank you, Carrie Whisper, for even being here and listening to the show today. Today's quotes come from Oliver Wendell Holmes, an American physician, poet, writer, humorist, and a professor at Harvard. The years 1809 to 1894 is when he lived. He writes, quote, "Insanity is often the logic of an accurate mind overtaxed." Put your mind to that one for a little bit. You know, he was a prolific investigator, and we can understand a little bit of what he's thinking. So when you are stressed, your logic mind can go illogic. And the next very often quoted saying from Albert Einstein, a German-born American physicist who developed the special and general theories of relativity and received the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1921. He lived in 1879 to 1955. He said, "Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results." And so this is one of the keys to the New York Times article where this gentleman, Joe, who was dealing his entire life with schizophrenia, something clicked in his mind, and he realized at one point in one interaction with a colleague that all of these voices that he heard were not real, that he actually recognized that they were delusions. And at that point, he began to self-recover. He still hears the voices, but he can understand that they are not his true self. There's something wrong in the mechanism of his thinking mind. And only if he could get some homeopathic care, I wish he could. Now we're going to... I wanted to let you also know that we have an online newspaper called Homeopaths Daily, and there are many, many articles on there. If you're on Twitter, just follow me at debbiebrook.com, and you will get many links and updates to that. Also, a thank you to Dr. Roger Van Zandvoort for his support of Homeopathy World Community, and I would invite people to take a look at his CompleteDynamics.com, and he has an incredible Materia Medica and case management analysis computer program that many, many people are learning about, and I use it almost daily. I want to review again where we were on the last session, and I put this show up to a little bit more time. I'm going to check on our time and see. We're going to move right along to understanding the mind-body wisdom and what Hahnemann has to say. We have been talking in the last three or four shows about insanity and mania caused by fright and vexation and the abuse of spiritual liquors. In the case of Joe, he had a very hardship upbringing where he was in an adoptive family. He was abused. He was violated. All sorts of things could put a person into this state of being crazy, not in their sane right mind. And Hahnemann says that they're suddenly broken as if they go into an acute disease. And this is what we're going to talk about later, because he talks about intermittent. The person isn't hearing the voices 24/7. It just comes and goes depending on what maybe is triggering that particular symptom. And although it almost arises from an internal source, something that is ingrained, a miasm, as Hahnemann would say, it's like a flame bursting forth from it. And I'm reading from aphorism number 221 of Hahnemann's genius, Organon of Medicine. So he does list a number of remedies for these types of acute flare-ups like aconite, belladonna, stramonium, hyoscyamus, and mercury. And when they're given in a highly potentized, minute homeopathic dose, it can actually subdue these symptoms. But remember, Hahnemann says that these are only an acute flare-up from something that is chronic, that is ongoing, and it needs to be looked at a broader, more expansive way of what's going on in that person's life and not just the immediate symptoms that are brought up. Sometimes the acute situation is covered, and when you cover the acute situation, the chronic is also covered, I would say. So in aphorism number 229, he says, on the other hand, contradiction, eager explanations, rude corrections, and invectives, as also weak, timorous yielding, are quite out of place with these types of patients. They're equally pernicious modes of treating mental and emotional maladies, but such patients are most of all exacerbated and their complaint aggravated by contumely, insolent or insulting language or treatment. So we see Hahnemann, he says that these people are also often deceived. The physician and keeper must always pretend to believe them to be possessed of reason. So here we are going back to what Oliver Wendell Holmes says, that the person has some reason behind their behavior, behind their thinking, and we must listen to them as if this is their true world. This is really what they're surrounded by, and if we can observe that, we can understand them the more so. He says, all kinds of external disturbing influences on their senses and disposition should be, if possible, removed. And I talked about that in the last session, how we remove them from their home situation or whatever's clouding their mind or things in their environment that cause the trigger that disturbance. No means of instruction, no soothing effects from conversation, books, or other things for the soul that pines or frets in the chains of the diseased body. No invigoration for it but the cure. It is only when the bodily health is changed for the better that tranquility and comfort again beam upon their mind. Hahnemann is telling us that even though John Kabat-Zinn has provided outer methods, methods that we can create some structure in our lives and outer tools, and this is what Joe uses. He uses tools to subdue these symptoms. Hahnemann tells us that can help, but it's not going to cure. So Hahnemann states in the key footnote to this aphorism, you often hear the patient speak about finding peace, freedom from disturbance, quiet, and tranquility. Yet you can while away an hour or two in peace and seclusion, freedom from or cessation of war or violence. The straits were to be open to warships in peace of time, free from anxiety or stress. Perhaps I'm reading something else that I was thinking about peace. Here is the actual footnote to the aphorism. The treatment of the violent insane mania and melancholy can take place only in an institution specially arranged for their treatment, but not within the family circle of the patient. And I mentioned that the last time, if the disease is constantly triggered in the family setting, we must remove them from the setting into a place where they can get special treatment. Aphorism number 230 states, if the antipsoriatic remedies selected for each particular case of mental or emotional disease, there are incredibly numerous varieties of them, be quite homeopathically suited for the faithfully traced picture of the morbid state, which if there be a sufficient number of this kind of medicines known in respect of their pure effects, is ascertained by an indefatigable search for the most appropriate homeopathic remedy all the more easily, as the emotional and mental state constituting the principal symptom of such a patient is so unmistakably perceptible. Then the most striking improvement in no very long time, which could not be brought about by physicking the patient to death with the largest, often repeated doses of all other unsuitable allopathic medicines. Indeed, I can confidently assert from great experience that the vast superiority of the homeopathic system over all other conceivable methods of the treatment is nowhere displayed in a more triumphant light than in mental and emotional diseases of long standing, which originally sprang from corporeal maladies or were developed simultaneously with them. Here, Hahnemann shows his confidence in the homeopathic approach to healing. He tells us that large doses of repeated medicaments, such as the dopamine drugs, are going to need to be repeated over and over in larger and larger doses, or finding other types of drugs to deal with a person's symptoms. Whereas with homeopathy, the minutest energetic drug, medicament, that is a medicine or drug that pertains specifically to the unique picture of symptoms that an individual elicits, these are the ones that are going to be used. And he says it's an antipsoriatic remedy, a core miasmic remedy, where a person is in great distress and fear, perhaps exhibiting violence, changing of disposition or personality. He says that when we look at these long-standing emotional diseases and mental diseases, they are so well brought out into the light that he says homeopathy has a chance to deal with them and bring it to a cure. Aphorism number 231 states, the intermittent diseases deserve a special consideration. Just a minute. As well those that recur at certain periods, like the number of The intermittent diseases deserve a special consideration, as well as those that recur at certain periods, like the great number of intermittent fevers and the apparently non-febrile affections that recur at intervals like intermittent fevers, as also those in which certain morbid states alternate at uncertain intervals with morbid states of a different kind. It's a little bit difficult to understand here what Hahnemann is speaking of. He is elucidating or intimating that we don't know when these morbid states are going to arise, but that, as in the case of a fever and even non-febrile affections, they come at intermittent stages, and in which these morbid states alternate at uncertain intervals. So he's kind of giving us a time period for when these events occur. So we all are all familiar with having a sickness, an illness, when we suddenly spike a high fever, or when we get in the range of something that is allergic, we are allergic to, and we go into a whole range of symptoms. And so he says, these things come and go. That's what he's saying here in Aphorism 231. Aphorism 232. These latter alternating diseases are also very numerous, but all belong to the class of chronic diseases. They are generally a manifestation of developed sore alone, sometimes but seldom complicated with a syphilitic miasm, and therefore in the former case may be cured by antisoric medicines. In the latter, however, in alternation with antisyphilitics, as taught in my own work, my work on the chronic diseases. So Hahnemann has written a thorough book called Chronic Diseases, where he teaches about these miasmatic core, how heredity and genetics and the core of disease comes from these miasms. He's telling us here in Aphorism 232 regarding alternating diseases, and we're all probably familiar how one thing can alternate, whether we're feeling clear in our head but our body is aching or in some disorder, or whether our body is aching but now our mind is clear. So these kinds of symptoms can alternate back and forth. Let's see if he gives us any specifics here. He has a footnote. Two or three states may alternate with one another. Thus, for instance, in a case of double alternating diseases, certain pains may occur persistently in the legs. Immediately on the disappearance of a kind of ophthalmia, which later again appears as soon as the pains in the limbs have gone off for some time. Convulsions and spasms may alternate immediately with any other affection of the body or some part of it. In a case of threefold alternating states, in a common indisposition, periods of apparent increase of health and unusual exaltation of the corporeal and mental powers, extravagant gaiety, extraordinary activity of the body, excess of comfortable feeling, inordinate appetite may occur, after which, and quite unexpectedly, gloomy, melancholy humor, intolerable hypochondriacal derangement of the disposition, with disorder of several of the vital operations, the digestion, the sleep, etc., appear, which again and just as suddenly give place to the habitual moderate ill health. and so also several and very various alternating states. When the new state makes its appearance, there is often no perceptible trace of the former one. In other cases, only slight traces of the former alternating state remain when the new one occurs. Few of the symptoms of the first state remain on the appearance and during the continuance of the second. Sometimes, the morbid alternating states are quite of opposite natures, as, for instance, melancholy periodically alternating with gay insanity or frenzy. So here he has given us some examples. And you can also, when I get that post up from the New York Times article, the gentleman named Joe also had these alternating states in his emotion and his mind. He tried to hold down like 30 different jobs. He obviously was able to get the job, but he couldn't keep it because of the voices in his head telling him that he was doing wrong. And he would lash back at somebody when he heard these voices, until this present day when he is now aware that they are delusionary sounds. The thing that Hahnemann is showing us is that a gentleman in this situation can be perfectly normal at some points where he is in a family, a married life situation. He is kind. This particular gentleman took in many, many adopted children into his home because he related so much to their plight of being put in a home and not having a family to nurture. So he was very, very compassionate. It's almost as if he took in every stray dog, these types of persons who feel so much the life of the other. And he was a good person. The problem was with these unexpected states, as Hahnemann teaches us in aphorism number 231. These intermittent states, or periodically, come totally unexpectedly in 232. And he gives us also not only the intermittent emotional mental disorder, but also that it can range with physical disorder. So I hope that is clear. And any comments or questions, I'll do my best to answer. I'm going to move on to aphorism number 233. The typical intermittent diseases are those where a morbid state of unvarying character returns at a tolerably fixed period, whilst the patient is apparently in good health and takes its departure at an equally fixed period. This is observed in those apparently non-febrile morbid states that come and go in a periodical manner at certain times, as well as in those of a febrile character, to wit, the numerous varieties of intermittent fevers. So he has told us that when a person has a fever, we normally can see that they go into a state of mania with this, the body heating up, the mind changes, and a person can have hallucinations and delusions and all sorts of things. We have numerous homeopathic remedies in the Materia Medica that teach us about this, whether it's baptisia, we feel as if our parts are separated, or I've just been learning about stramonium, which is also good for autistic and ADHD children, where they are grinding their teeth and in a manic state and have tremendous fears, fears of monsters, fears of being killed, fears of wild animals. All of these things can occur in a fever state. And as a matter of fact, the plant family of the Solanaceae plants, there's this triad of Hyoscyamus, Belladonna, and Stramonium, which are top remedies to use in these states, acute fever. And so he's telling us that what we see in these physical ailments, this state of febrile mania, can also be seen even when there is no fever, but that these states do come and go in a periodical manner. Aphorism number 234, those apparently non-febrile, typical periodically recurring morbid states just alluded to, observed in one single patient at a time, they do not usually appear sporadically or epidemically, always belong to the chronic diseases. So he's saying here that this is not an epidemic disease where everybody's getting this fever or getting these manic states without having a fever. He's pointing specifically, this is something that we're looking at an individual, one single patient. He goes on to say, mostly to those that are purely psoric, are but seldom complicated with syphilis and are successfully treated by the same means, yet it is sometimes necessary to employ as an intermediate remedy a small dose of a potentized solution of cinchona bark in order to extinguish completely their intermittent type. So we're familiar with Hahnemann's original investigation into malaria, which has chills, fever, and all the symptoms thereof, malaria, and how quinine from the cinchona bark was given during his lifetime as a method to heal, and we also use the same thing today, chloroquine coming from cinchona bark. But he's telling us that we do not need to give it in a material dose. We only need to give it in a small, minimal, homeopathic, potentized solution to deal with these intermittent types of complications. He also directs our attention to the fact that the disease is psoric, meaning that it is not just a one-time thing. It just doesn't pop up intermittently for no reason, but there's an underlying sore, an underlying miasm, which is a chronic state that needs to be dealt with. He also referred to in an earlier aphorism about how these different miasms can mingle, how not only one or two, but three states may alternate with one another, and that sometimes it is related to other miasms, including the syphilitic miasm, which in many people would think that they will not live. They feel like they will die. Okay, so that's aphorism number 233 and 234. Let's see how much time we have left to the show, and then we'll go ahead to plenty of time, 235. With regard to the intermittent fevers that prevail sporadically or epidemically, not those endemically located in marshy districts, we often find every paroxysm likewise composed of two opposite alternating states, cold heat and heat cold, more frequently still of three, cold heat sweat. Therefore, the remedy selected for them from the general class of proved common not antipsoric medicines must either, and remedies of this sort are the surest, be able to likewise to produce in the healthy body two, or all three, similar alternating states, or else must correspond by similarity, of symptoms, in the most homeopathic manner possible, to the strongest, best marked, and most peculiar alternating state, either to the cold stage, or to the hot stage, or to the sweating stage, each with its accessory symptoms, according as the one or other alternating state is the strongest and most peculiar. But the symptoms of the patient's health during the intervals when he is free from fever must be the chief guide to the most appropriate homeopathic remedy. So Hahnemann is teaching us directly from his exquisite a number of cases and experience of his lifetime that even though there are these fever states, these acute states, these physical ailments that we're looking at, these alternating opposites of cold and heat or heat and cold, including a third symptom of perspiration, whether it is on the head or the whole body or where it is, we have specifics in the repertory to look up regarding sweat and where on the body it is, whether a person wants to be covered or uncovered, whether their covered body sweats or only their uncovered parts of their body. It's very specific things that we can observe and learn to know and be able to find the most appropriate remedy. He's telling us, therefore, that the remedy selected from the general class of proved common and not anti-soric medicines must be either be able to likewise to produce in the healthy body two similar alternating states. Thus, he's teaching us about the properties of a drug. We all know that a medicine or a drug is something that produces particular symptoms in a living organism. And therefore, he's telling us the only appropriate remedy to select is one as a medicine that can produce these alternating symptoms. And that's why he learned this cinchona bark can help in malaria. He says, or else it must correspond by similarity of symptoms in the most homeopathic manner possible to the strongest, best marked, and most peculiar alternating state. So here again, he's teaching us about strange, rare, and peculiar. What is the change from the normal state to the intermittent ill state that the individual is undergoing? And when we can discern what is it that where does the person go from the main, normal, rational being to the irrational being with all of these febrile symptoms? That is what we're looking for in order to find the proper remedy. He says also that the symptoms of the patient's health during the intervals when he is free from fever must be the chief guide to the most appropriate homeopathic remedy. Therefore, not the most appropriate remedy may not be only discerned from the febrile state, but we must look at how the person is when they seem to be well. They appear to be well, but they're not truly well. I'm going to take a look at the chat. We have Dr. Bob says, when a mosquito transfers the falciparum parasite to your body, you can get acutely sick, but also you can have relapses for the rest of your life. He asked, will the homeopathic cinchona prevent this? I do imagine that is what Hahnemann is teaching us, that when we look at the individual and hear very clearly in aphorism number 235, we're looking at the totality of the case. We're looking at the person both in his apparent well state and then in the intermittent state of the alteration of his symptoms and the alternating symptoms. So I think that if we find the appropriate remedy to the constitution of that individual, it will prevent future outbreaks, future flare-ups, because you've dealt with the etiology in the vital force of the individual, where it's the soric miasm or the syphilitic miasm. That's what he's teaching us. This particular aphorism has a footnote that says, the pathology hitherto in vogue, which is still in the stage of irrational infancy, recognizes but one single intermittent fever, which is likewise termed ague, A-G-U-E, and admits of no varieties but such as are constituted by the different intervals at which the paroxysms recur, quotidian, tertian, quartan, etc. But there are much more important differences among them than what are marked by the periods of their recurrence. There are innumerable varieties of these fevers, some of which cannot even be denominated ague, as their fits consist solely of heat. Others, again, are characterized by cold alone, with or without subsequent perspiration. Yet others, which exhibit general coldness of the surface, with a sensation of heat on the patient's part, or whilst the body feels externally hot, the patient feels cold. others again, in which one paroxysm consists entirely of a rigor or simple chilliness, followed by an interval of health, while the next consists of heat alone, followed or not by perspiration. Others again, in which the heat comes first, and the cold stage not till that is gone. Others again, wherein, after a cold or hot stage, a pyrexia ensues, and then perspiration comes on like a second fit, often many hours subsequently. Others again, in which no perspiration at all comes on, and yet others, in which the whole attack consists of perspiration alone, without any cold or hot stage, or in which the perspiration is only present during the heat. And there are innumerable other differences, especially in regard to the accessory symptoms, such as headache of a peculiar kind, bad taste in the mouth, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, want of or excessive thirst, peculiar pains in the body or limbs, disturbed sleep, delirium, alternations of temper, spasms, and so on, before, during, or after the cold stage, before, during, or after the hot stage, before, during, or after the sweating stage, and countless other varieties. All these are manifestly intermittent fevers of very different kinds, each of which, as might naturally be supposed, requires a special homeopathic treatment. It must be confessed that they can almost all be suppressed, as is often done, by enormous doses of bark and of its pharmaceutical preparation, the sulfite of quinine. That is to say, their periodical recurrence, their typhus, may be extinguished by it. But the patients who suffered from intermittent fevers for which cinchona bark is not suitable, as is the case with all those epidemic intermittent fevers that traverse whole countries and even mountainous districts, are not restored to health by the extinction of the typhus. On the contrary, they now remain ill in another manner and worse, often much worse than before. They are affected by peculiar chronic bark dyscrasias and can scarcely be restored to health even by a prolonged treatment by the true system of medicine. And yet, that is what is called curing, forsooth. And he gives an exclamation point on that. So, that is a long footnote to aphorism number 235, where he was talking about intermittent fevers. And what this shows us is that homeopathy is a holistic way of treating. It treats the individual, and it looks specifically at all the variations. We do not just say a person has a fever. We say much, much more, and we take into consideration all of the paroxysmal symptoms, whether that is heat or cold or perspiration, before, during, and after. What is the person like? And I gave a little example before about whether they like or don't like to be covered. He goes on to tell us whether they have a thirst, whether they have a chill, whether their body is trembling, whether they internally feel hot, but somebody touches them and they feel cold, whether it is a dry heat, like in belladonna, whether their eyes are, their pupils are wide open or closed shut. It all depends on these observations to discern what is the proper remedy that is going to assist the person in their healing. And what he goes on to tell us is that when you just automatically give this for that, give sulfate of quinine, chloroquine or quinine or any other kind of medicament to an individual just because they have a fever, that's not going to lead to a cure. It may suppress their symptoms. It may alleviate temporarily their symptoms, but it may cause other kinds of illnesses, long-term illnesses. And unfortunately, Hahnemann says that if they continue with this, they can scarcely be restored to health due to these types of prolonged treatments. And also, he says, prolonged treatment by the true system of medicine, of health, it's going to be more and more difficult to lead to cure. He also has another footnote to aphorism 235, which we're reading today. He says, Dr. von Boninghausen, who has rendered more services to our beneficent system of medicine than any other of my disciples, has best elucidated this subject, which demands so much care, and has facilitated the choice of the efficient remedy for the various epidemics of fever. In his work entitled, and this is, pardon my German, Versuch einer homeopathischen Therapie der Verselfieber, written in 1833. I really apologize that I don't know how to read German, but he obviously has written a piece of literature that Hahnemann was proud to call him his student. Let me see if there's any other questions here. Aphorism number 236, we're going to move forward if there are no questions from listeners. We still have a little bit of time. The most appropriate and efficacious time for administering the medicine in these cases is immediately or very soon after the termination of the paroxysm, as soon as the patient has in some degree recovered from its effects. It has then time to effect all the changes in the organism requisite for the restoration of health without any great disturbance or violent commotion. Whereas the action of a medicine, be it ever so specifically appropriate, if given immediately before the paroxysm, coincides with the natural recurrence of the disease and causes such a reaction in the organism, such a violent contention, that an attack of that nature produces at the very least a great loss of strength, if it does not endanger life. And he has a footnote there. I don't know if I have it. Let's see. And he also goes on to say, but if the medicine be given immediately after the termination of the fit, that is to say, at the period when the aporetic interval has commenced, and a long time before there are any preparations for the next paroxysm, then the vital force of the organism is in its best possible condition to allow itself to be quietly altered by the remedy and thus restored to the healthy state. So Hahnemann, in a couple of these aphorisms today, is talking about timing, very much so, talking about the timing of the illness, that it comes on in an intermittent paroxysm. He can come, whether it's triggered by something or even unknown causes. He also tells us when we should provide the appropriate remedy to restore the person to health. So he's basically saying, it sounds like, don't give it during a violent episode. Give it when in the intermediate stage, when the person is quieted down. Maybe the person has restored some of their vital force so that they have more energy to deal with the synthetic disease, which would be the homeopathic remedy, the artificial disease, the homeopathic potentized remedy, that the person can take it in better instead of giving it during the episode. I'm thinking about if a person has an epileptic fit, and again, when I spoke earlier about stramonium and belladonna and hyoscyamus, all three of those remedies are excellent for epilepsy. So when a person is going through some sort of a extreme fit with cramps or whether it's fever, whatever it might be, it's a difficult time to give a remedy. Wait until they've gone through that violent episode and give it to them when they're in a more peaceful state so that they can be restored to health. It's supposedly there's a footnote here, and I may not have it to talk about today. Let's see. So we're going to go to the next aphorism, and if I can, I will cover those footnotes later. Aphorism, we're here on aphorism number 236. The most appropriate and efficacious time for administering the medicine in these cases is immediately or very soon after the termination of the paroxysm. As soon as the patient has recovered from the effects, and we're now on 237. But if the stage of apyrexia be very short, as happens in some very bad fevers, or if it be disturbed by some of the after sufferings of the previous paroxysm, the dose of the homeopathic medicine should be administered when the perspiration begins to abate, or the other subsequent phenomena of the expiring paroxysm begin to diminish. So he's saying it's okay if these intermittent outbursts and flare-ups don't have very much time in between them, that the best time to give the remedy is on this side of when it's relaxing. If we were to look at these paroxysms as a curve, as they go up to the peak, Hahnemann's telling us don't give the remedy at the start. Give it when the curve is going down on the, and I'm thinking right in my mind about the waxing and waning of the moon. Very often we give remedies to people at different periodicities in the waxing and waning of the moon. And here he's saying during this episode, we want to give it during the calmest period. And if we don't have a very large amount of time to give the remedy, give it during the period when it's fading away, when this violent reaction is on the down swing. Aphorism number 238 states, not infrequently, the suitable medicine has with a single dose destroyed several attacks and brought about the return of health. But in the majority of cases, another dose must be administered after each attack. Better still, however, when the character of the symptoms has not changed, doses of the same medicine given according to the newer discovery of repetition of doses, and he directs us to see note to aphorism number 270, may be given without difficulty by dynamizing each successive dose with 10 to 12 succussions of the vial containing the medicinal substance. Nevertheless, there are at times cases, though seldom, where the intermittent fever returns after several days, well-being. So this return of the same fever after a healthy interval is only possible when the noxious principle that first caused the fever is still acting upon the convalescents, as is the case in marshy regions. Here, a permanent restoration can often take place only by getting away from this causative factor, as is possible by seeking a mountainous retreat if the cause was a marshy fever. So here Hahnemann teaches us about, as we talked about earlier in today's reading and session, that if a person is in a manic state and they are continually in this manic state in the family setting or whatever setting it is, that they need to be removed. And this is what we call an obstacle to cure. If they're constantly being triggered by something, and in this case, in a marshy state to getting these fevers, you've got to go into a new landscape, a new environment to clear that individual's health. So he says at the beginning of aphorism number 238, the suitable medicine has with a single dose destroyed several attacks and brought about the return of health. So maybe even one single dose of the remedy can bring the attacks down to nothing and actually brought the person back to health. But based on his experience, in the majority of cases, another dose must be administered after each attack. And then he teaches us, he directs us to review in the Organon of Medicine edition number 6, that he uses a method of repeating doses in water. These are his water dilutions, and where you're stirring, or he says succussing 10 to 12 times the remedy that is put in water and succussed and potentized. In each case, when we do this, the remedy is slightly changed to give the energies, the person's vital force, a slightly different energetic resonance by using these water doses and repeated doses. Because in previous aphorisms, he says, the body does not always like to get the same exact remedy again, repeated again and again. So he uses this method. And sometimes he'll talk about leaving the glass of water by the patient's bedside, and they take sips of it as needed. So here he says the return of the same fever, even after a healthy interval, is only possible when the noxious principle that first caused the fever and is still acting upon the convalescent individual is removed. So that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? He really has so much experience to teach us. I made today's show extremely long. I thought I had a lot to talk about, and it's okay if you – I think I'm going to keep going because I'd like to finish reading the Hahnemann's Organon sometime this year. It's been over 14 months that we've been reading it, and the more we delve into it, the more we learn. Aphorism number 239, I'm going to just check if there are still people listening with us. Thank you very much. And aphorism number 239, as almost every medicine causes in its pure action, a special, peculiar fever, and even a kind of intermittent fever with its alternating states, differing from all other fevers that are caused by other medicines, homeopathic remedies may be found in the extensive domain of medicines for all the numerous varieties of natural intermittent fevers, and for a great many of such fevers, even in the moderate collection of medicines already proved on the healthy individual. So here he says, homeopathy has the greatest variety of remedies to heal these intermittent fevers, which I was discussing earlier. For an example, the variety of remedies we have to deal with fears. And we have a variety of remedies to deal with all kinds of physical, emotional, and mental disorders. And that is why Hahnemann has proven so many remedies. And when he was talking earlier, in the earlier aphorism, about the descriptions of all the different types of fevers, there's no doubt in my mind that when he was proving the cinchona bark, quinine, and he exhibited the symptoms of these fevers, he was speaking from personal experience. He was knowing not only what he saw in the clinic in observations from patients, but also from his own personal self. And there's nothing that we know more clearly than when we have proven something and we know it by our heart and our mind that this is the sensations and feelings that we have. And so he's telling us that there's a moderate collection of already proved on healthy individuals, which means that, number one, he had a collection of colleagues who also took medicines, homeopathically potentized medicines, and wrote down all of the symptoms that occurred by proving these medicines. And we also have persons who were at one point, so he's contrasting it to people who are sick and have these symptoms. And also you can think of a person who is normally well, but then traverses or takes a vacation in a marshland and gets malaria. That person is also delineating many of the symptoms. And if they were healed with homeopathic remedies, he can use those as examples. Aphorism number 240, but if the remedy found to be the homeopathic specific for a prevalent epidemic of intermittent fever, do not affect a perfect cure in some one or other patient, if it be not the influence of a marshy district that prevents the cure, it must always be the soric miasm in the background, in which case anti-soric medicines must be employed until complete relief is obtained. So here he's providing differentiation between that healthy individual who contracts a disease or a whole region, a population of people who contract an epidemic disease, this intermittent fever, to the person who has this as a chronic disease, where you need not just the acute homeopathic remedy, but again, the anti-soric miasmatic medicine in order to get the complete relief, which is what Dr. Bob has asked. Earlier, he asked, if we give the correct remedy, will this prevent ongoing chronic intermittent episodes of the fever? And basically, in aphorism number 240, Hahnemann is telling us, yes, we can get complete relief. Aphorism number 241, epidemics of intermittent fever in situations where none are endemic are of the nature of chronic diseases composed of single acute paroxysms. Each single epidemic is of a peculiar, uniform character common to all the individuals attacked. And when this character is found in the totality of the symptoms common to all, it guides us to the discovery of the homeopathic specific remedy suitable for all the cases, which is almost universally serviceable in those patients who enjoyed tolerable health before the occurrence of the epidemic, that is to say, who were not chronic sufferers from the developed sora. Here, in aphorism number 241, he's telling us that during an epidemic, such as influenza, such as dengue fever, that if there is a population that most of the people, a majority of the people, have the exact same symptoms or very close symptoms, whether it is chills, perspiration, headache, a quality of pain, or a desire, a craving, behavior, things that they say, their emotional disturbances, their mental disturbances, if all of these things can be gathered, and this is what genus epidemicus is, when the homeopaths see that a whole community of people have the same symptoms, and they then find a matching similar medicine that can elicit this artificial disease very similar to the natural disease, then you can utilize this one or three remedies, one, two, or three remedies that cover all of these symptoms. So that is what he's talking about in that case. But again, he ends that aphorism with, they were not the chronic sufferers from the developed sora. He keeps pushing the same idea over and over again, that if it is an epidemic, if it is an acute, if the patient is basically healthy, okay, you're going to reach a good similimum, a good remedy. But if this is a chronic sufferer, then you need to look at what are the homeopathic remedies that deal with sora. Aphorism number 242, I think this is going to be the last one for today. We've covered a lot of ground. If, however, in such an epidemic intermittent fever, the first paroxysms have been left uncured, or if the patients have been weakened by improper allopathic treatment, folks, remember, you don't give aspirin during an influenza fever. It is not going to be helpful and may weaken the vital force. That was a comment by the editorial here. Then the inherent Sora that exists, alas, he says with an exclamation point, in so many persons, although in a latent state, becomes developed, takes on the type of the intermittent fever, and to all appearances continues to play the part of the epidemic intermittent fever, so that the medicine, which would have been useful in the first paroxysms, rarely are they an antisoric, are now no longer suitable and cannot be of any service. We have now to do with a soric intermittent fever only, and this will generally be subdued by minute and rarely repeated doses of sulfur or hepersulfurous in a high potency. Here he's giving us a specific two remedies for what he has observed in the real world when there were malarial outbreaks, when there were epidemic intermittent fevers, and when the allopaths had given what he calls improper treatments that weakened the vital force. It didn't. The vital force no longer had the power within it to push off the disease using the inherent using the remedies that you might have chosen. But now he's saying it has gone into this latent stage and developed into a more chronic condition. And he has found in his experience that that the doses of sulfur or hepersulf, which has calcarea carbonicum in with the sulfur, are going to be useful. And he says specifically in this aphorism that they will be subdued, the intermittent fevers will be subdued by rarely repeated doses. Therefore, he's showing us that in the previous situation, when there were paroxysms and you needed to give a repeated dose during the waning or the period of intermittent fever or outbreak, that he needed to give these repeated doses. Here he's telling us, do not repeat. They are not going to be repeated very often. And I think I'm going to close on that. And the next radio show, we're going to go ahead with aphorism number 243, continuing talk about these intermittent fevers and attacks and how they are in the individual or with the epidemic, meaning in a population of people. I hope that the show has been interesting, illuminating, and helpful to the listeners, because Hahnemann is a genius and he has provided so much information to teach the physician about the art and science of medicine, how to use our powers of observation and to heal all kinds of ills, whether mental, emotional, physical, spiritual ills. And we just keep studying every single day. We just keep studying the organon. We keep studying our materia medica and learning about the rubrics and having conversations among ourselves, especially on Homeopathy World Community, where we have thousands of homeopaths who can interact and discuss. We're very blessed to have them, very blessed to have experts with many, many decades of experience who share their knowledge with us. And do get on to Homeopathy World Community, the network. It is open for the public to read all of the articles there. We will be going very soon to a fee-based membership, and I'm hoping that people will see the value of everything that we have to offer about our purposes, creating waves of awareness, creating ripples in the medical field, getting homeopathy introduced to all kinds of medical professions, whether you are in a nurse, a physician's assistant, a regular physician in all of their specialties. We have homeopathic remedies to deal with all kinds of situations. Recently, we were undergoing a lot of people going to the emergency room for heat stroke, And again, this could bring on an intermittent fever, and we have remedies such as belladonna or glonine that deal with heat stroke. And it wouldn't it be a blessing if the emergency room people were allowed, physicians were allowed to utilize these remedies to while the patients are just sitting there for hours on end waiting to be seen because there's such overcrowded situations there. And so please, let's create some more waves. Let's get the information out to the public. People can learn so much on their own, and there are classes. Again, at the beginning of the show, I told you there's going to be a live internet show coming directly from Bulgaria about learning the sensation method. And you're going to see incredible cases being solved. So without further ado, I would like to sign off today and let people comment on the HWC, on the Blog Talk Radio Network. And I think I can maybe put on some music for the last few minutes of the show.